Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Dear Prudence. I'm your Prudence, Janae Desmond Harris. Today, we'll be discussing how to tell a friend they're a horrible boss, whether a husband who won't open the bathroom shades to give the plants a little light is a problem, and what to do when your friend setting you up on dates makes you feel like you might be a bigot. Helping me out today is Michael Hobbs, a journalist who hosts the podcast If Books Could Kill in Maintenance Phase. He writes about the media, moral panics, and the gaslighting of America in his newsletter, Confirm My Choices. Welcome to the show, Michael.
I am having like an existential crisis since you sent the questions yesterday.
Well, I thought it was so funny that you wrote back and said these questions are so hard.
I don't know how you do this. It's really difficult.
Well, I just think of you as someone, because I listen to your other podcasts, I feel like you always have just encyclopedic knowledge of almost every topic and really strong opinions. So I'm ready
That's
for
fake.
You to
That's
say.
Editing. That's because I do like 3 weeks of research before my own podcast. But
yeah,
for this,
I was wondering if
I'm
you
like,
might show
man.
Up with like 8 pages of notes for each answer, heavily researched and cited.
All I have in real life, my strategy for giving people advice is to just like ask them questions. Because like typically people like know what they're going to do when they come to you for advice.
Yeah.
You're like, how do you feel about that? What have you done in the past? But with these, I just like read the dilemmas and I'm like, this is hard.
No, they are.
Sounds tough.
They are really, really hard. And we can talk about all the ways that they're hard, but I think yeah. I'll still make you sort of, you know. Come out
okay,
on one side
dang
or the
it.
Other. But before we get started, I want to ask you something we ask of every guest on the show, which is, what's one piece of unsolicited advice that you would just love to share with our listeners?
I think, honestly, the best piece of advice I ever got in my life was to stay off the treadmill as long as possible. I had a former boss. I was like doing a bunch of internships and I was like sort of on that kind of career track trying to get into like the economy as fast as possible at age like 19 or something. And this boss of mine, this really cool lady in her late 50s was like, stay off the treadmill, like do weird stuff for as long as you can do. And then that's basically how I spent most of my 20s was like goofing off. And I did weird master's degrees because they were free in Denmark at the time.
Oh.
And so I get, I'm sure you get these too, but like young journalists are like, what should I do to be a journalist? And
yeah.
I'm like, just don't do anything
right.
for a while. Just like goof off
yeah.
as long as possible.
And do things you love and are interested in, not things you
yeah,
think
exactly.
you should be doing.
Yeah. And then you stumble into something or you have a better idea of it once you can, if you're able to goof off, continue that as long as you possibly can.
So when you said stay off the treadmill, I thought I took that literally. And I thought,
oh.
I thought it was going to be about the gym because people always fall off. You know, it's like the
oh,
easiest
yeah.
piece of equipment to get hurt on, it seems.
Yeah, I just have occupational health and safety advice. That's all I have.
I was like, that really came out of nowhere, but you know, it might be solid. I'm sure he has the research to back it up. Anyway, Michael and I will dive into your questions after a short break. Can't get enough Dear Prudence? Then you should definitely join Slate Plus, Slate's membership program. You'll get to hear me answer an extra question every week just for members. With your subscription, you get ad-free listening across the Slate network and unlimited reading on the Slate site, including all Dear Prudence columns, past and present. Go to slate.com/PrudyPlus to sign up. It's just $15 for your first 3 months. Again, that's slate.com/PrudyPlus.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dear Prudence, and I'm here with Michael Hobbs. Let's get started with our first letter. It's titled Ficus Aficionado.
I have been married to my wonderful husband for 10 years, and we both work full-time. I adore him. On Fridays, he leaves for work after me. We have a lovely, warm, and sunny bathroom that is home to about 9 tropical houseplants, which I also adore. I have asked him repeatedly to open the window shades when he's done in the bathroom before he leaves for the day so that my plants get as much sun as possible, especially during these winter months. Unfortunately, he constantly forgets to do this, so when I come home in the evening, the shades are closed and the plants have been sitting in the dark all day. It drives me a little nuts. We don't get into arguments about it, but being let down in this one aspect is now a routine annoyance for me. I don't think this is some passive-aggressive maneuvering on his part. He's otherwise a very thoughtful spouse and manages to lovingly navigate all my other neuroses, and I his, which makes this particular mental block even more frustrating. I have resorted to setting an alarm on my phone to text him a reminder every Friday, which I resent. I hate feeling like a nag. We are on a tight budget, so installing a timed grow light rig is not an option. He says that the plants will probably be fine in the dark for a day, and you know what? He's probably right. But he also acknowledges the principle of the thing and says he will try to remember. My sister thinks I should let it go. I think he should figure out his own way to remember and actually stick to it. What do you think?
So, one line answer, I'm with your sister, let it go, let it go. But it took me some thinking to get there. So, Michael, I want to ask you, are you familiar with the orange peel theory?
No.
Okay. They've been talking about it on TikTok. The youth have been talking about it on TikTok.
Okay. That's why I don't know about it.
Yeah. Well, it's gotten to the point where they've written articles.
It's now reached the 40-year-old set.
Yeah, okay. That's how
I'm ready to learn.
Okay. So basically, it's the idea that if you ask your partner to peel an orange for you, that's something you could do yourself. You're totally capable, but it's an act of love for them to just go ahead and say yes and do it. And you want a partner who will peel your metaphorical orange in various situations in life. So my first thought was, are the blinds for the plants this letter writer's orange peel? You know, is it a thing that she is asking of their partner that the partner just won't do? And it's feeling like there's a lack of love there because it's not that hard.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is a weirdly small thing.
Yeah, it's a weirdly small thing, but it's also not something that's his job. So
right.
I thought through the orange peel thing and I thought, no, I don't really think this fits here. I also first read the letter through the lens of the many, many letters I get in which male partners struggle to carry their weight around the house. And I get a lot of letters from women complaining about their spouse who won't do the dishes or help with cooking or do the laundry or take responsibility for their kids. And so sort of my knee-jerk reaction was like, he just needs to do this. You know, it's weaponized incompetence. Why isn't he doing it?
Right.
But that applies to things that need to be done. This is your hobby. These plants are your hobby that you volunteered to have. I don't think it needs to be his job to take care of them. Like, you don't have a hobby that requires upkeep by somebody else.
This is the piece of advice that I should have said earlier when I was in eighth grade and like an argumentative little libertarian. I read this book called How to Argue and Win Every Time by this like probably wildly problematic lawyer. And one of the pieces of advice in there was never argue anything on principle alone. That if, you know, if your friend borrows a dollar and doesn't pay you back, it's the same principle as borrowing $10,000 and not paying you back. But it would be deranged to treat those two things exactly the same. And so you can't just think about the principle of like, I've asked him to do this and he doesn't do it. You also have to look at like, well, how like big of a deal is this? And also, is this like a metaphor for other ways in which he's inconsiderate? And is this part of a pattern of behavior of not taking your needs into account?
Right.
Or is he like pretty cool and he just like sucks at this one thing? And
right.
like you might just have to do the blinds or like save up and buy one of these timed something, some automated process. Like it might just be a weird fluke and like you just got to work around this one thing.
Yeah. And also it's not as if he's saying, no, I won't do the blinds.
Right.
I don't care if you remind me, I refuse to. That's your responsibility. She just says she feels resentful about having to remind him.
Right.
Don't. Set the alarm and call him. You're not being a nag. You're asking him for a favor. You're giving him a reminder because he's thinking about other things that have to do with getting out the door in the morning
right.
and that need to be done.
Right.
I think it is totally fine for you to set an alarm and text him every day to open the blinds, especially if he's willing to do it and doesn't find that annoying. Now, I could imagine getting a letter from the husband saying, my wife decided to get all these complicated plants that need to have light at a certain time, and she's not even home when the blinds need to be raised, and she's putting it all on me, and that's annoying.
Yeah.
I would actually be like, yeah, it is a little bit annoying. You can tell her that you don't want to, but he's willing to, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, we should do journalism on this show and get the both sides account. Like the husband was not available for comment. So I think, from a different perspective, it does sound like slightly worse.
Yeah, so I think going back to my first comment, listen to your sister, let this go. Sounds like you're married to a really nice guy who I don't hear anything in this letter about him needing reminders for things that are needed to keep the household running, walking the dog, switching the laundry, whatever. You have a system that's working pretty well. Continue to use it and tell him thanks. You're listening to the Dear Prudence Show, and when we come back, we'll be reading more of your letters. Stay with us.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaul.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Adultish is back. And this season, we're talking about standing up and learning how to take a stand for issues on the minds of young people, like book bans.
The book banning side, they have an incredibly well-oiled machine.
Filling in food deserts.
We have three community colleges where we either provide food boxes or an actual operating farmers market.
And what's affecting young people's mental and emotional health.
Pressures of school, friendships, from romantic relationships. Pressures from family.
New episodes of Adultish from YR Media drop every Thursday, so subscribe wherever you're listening now.
Welcome back to Dear Prudence. I'm here with my guest, Michael, to answer your letters, and the next one is titled Good Friend, Bad Boss.
My friend of nearly a decade, Jane, was promoted to her first management position in the last year, and recently I've been troubled by the things I've heard her say about her direct reports. She told me that one of her employees is only working here for the health insurance, since they have a disability, and she'd like to see them leave their position. She laughed it off when I said that health insurance is actually a great reason to have a job, but I've since learned that that employee left, and I'm concerned that there was bias at play. I don't know if they quit or were let go. She was annoyed about one of her employees taking parental leave, particularly that they were not checking their email during their leave. Her specific dislike of that employee runs deep, and I frequently get texts throughout the day complaining about behavior that seems normal, i.e. cracking jokes in Slack. Is there anything I can or should say to her about this? I know on some level, she's just venting to me, a friend. She's young, excited about her job, single with no children, and doesn't seem to get that other people have different priorities. I'm also not a manager myself, so I'm not sure what's normal here. I honestly feel kind of affronted on behalf of her employees, who I'm sure don't deserve this kind of trash talk. But I also don't want to turn this into a huge thing with a close friend.
The question this letter raises for me is, do you like Jane?
Yeah, I know. My sucky friend.
Yeah. I mean, I hear that she's a longtime friend and a close friend, but usually when people report on the negative things that people in their lives are doing, they're accompanied by, she's so generous, she's so kind, she's the sweetest, most gentle person. And just noting that this letter wasn't balanced with any of that. And so, yeah, just a question for the letter writer to think about. Do you like who Jane is right now? Not when you met her a decade ago, but do you like the kind of person she is? And maybe it's yes, but just a question to think about. I don't know. What else crossed your mind, Michael?
So many years ago, when my grandfather passed away, my grandma got money from the inheritance and decided to take the entire family to Hawaii. So like all of us, aunts and uncles and everybody went. We stayed at like a nice resort. My grandma paid for everything. And on the way there, the airline like lost my luggage. And I was, after I got back, I was like complaining to a friend about it. Like, well, they lost my luggage. And she was like, are you seriously bitching about a free trip to Hawaii right now? Like, shut up. And it was like, it was done in like a jokey sort of way, but like, please listen to yourself right now. And that was honestly like one of, I think, the best things that close friends can do is be like, shut the fuck up and listen to yourself for a second. Yeah. I don't think this necessarily has to be like a confrontation, but I do think that you should like clown on your friend for being like, are you seriously like giving her shit for making jokes in Slack right now?
Right.
Really? You didn't make jokes in Slack when you were younger? I think that is like, to me, I don't know that this needs like a federal case to be made about it, but like you should make fun of your friend for this.
Yeah, I love that approach. That hasn't occurred to me because I was thinking you should just casually mention, oh, that's so funny. Haha. By the way, make sure you're not using a device that's also used for work emails, because what you're saying could be the basis of a lawsuit. It's actually
That's also a good one.
Would be really problematic or illegal if anyone heard it. But I kind of like the idea of making her a bit self-conscious by making fun of her more, because it will keep her from being like, oh, you're so serious, I can't tell you anything.
Right. And it's not that big of a deal. I mean, it seems like she is kind of a bad boss, which ultimately is like kind of out of your jurisdiction as a friend. I don't know that I like investigate whether my friends are great at their jobs or not. Right, I kind of get why you would want to keep that out. But like, yeah, if she's making comments like this, like, give her shit.
And actually in the letter, it says she laughed it off when I said health insurance is actually a great reason to have a job. So there is room for laughter in this relationship and there's room for some back and forth. So yeah, I wish I had written a script for that in advance, but something like what Michael said, just kind of be like, really?
Yeah, make fun of your friends and listen to the things that your friends make fun of you for. I think both of those things are useful.
That's your unsolicited advice. That's really good. Don't make fun of this woman. She'll either stop thinking about her employee this way, and she probably won't. At the very least, she'll probably stop bringing it to you.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
This is Dear Prudence. We need to take a break, but when we come back, more letters from you and advice from us. Stay tuned. I'm Janae, and you're listening to Dear Prudence. Michael Hobbs and I are ready to tackle our last question for the day. This letter is titled, Hopefully Not a Bigot.
I recently told my friend that I didn't want her setting me up with foreigners anymore, and she got offended. I know from the outset this sounds pretty terrible, but my reasons are very specific. I went to grad school in a country I absolutely love. The dating, however, was horrible, and almost every woman I talked to agreed. When I came back home, I mentioned that I still wanted to live there, and friends started to set me up with men from that country, thinking they might not behave so poorly since they had come from the US. That was a wrong assumption, as all of them exhibited the same poor behavior that made me feel uncomfortable. Friends started setting me up with many men, foreign and none, which didn't go well either. After a dating hiatus and a lot of introspection, I realized that I just don't want to date foreigners anymore. It's not because I think they're all bad or that Americans are better. I definitely had some terrible dates with Americans. I just realized that for what I want, being married to an American would be easier. With foreign men, I feel like there are just too many cultural differences for my comfort. I really like discussing shared experiences growing up where I did. I also noticed women who had American husbands were harassed less when I lived abroad. A friend thinks it's because American men have a reputation for being very aggressive, so locals don't want to fight. I think it would be really important to have someone from home and to not be harassed if I decide to move abroad again. I'm not completely opposed to having a relationship slash marrying a foreigner, but it's just not my preference at this time. I told all of this to my friends and they were shocked. They accused me of being a bigot and that they weren't going to set me up with anybody ever again. I reminded them that I didn't say I wouldn't date a foreigner ever, just that I didn't want to be set up with one. That did nothing. It's been weeks and a few have ghosted me. I feel like my reasoning is sound and I shouldn't have to date people I am uncomfortable with just because it hurts somebody else's feelings. Women are constantly told that we have to be nice to every man, the implication being that they deserve it and we should be so lucky to give them the time of day. I'm tired of this casual misogyny being covered up by anti-bigotry arguments. I just want to feel safe and comfortable. But since this has been so upsetting to my friends, I thought I'd get an outside perspective. Are my friends right?
Do you remember sort of the era of the internet where confessional essay writing and so-called think pieces were really prominent? This part. Women are constantly told that we have to be nice to every man, the implication being that they deserve it, and we should be so lucky to give them the time of day. I'm tired of this casual misogyny being covered up by anti-bigotry arguments. It just reminded me of that time. What an overblown hot take. What an incorrect analysis of the situation here. To be very clear, nobody is making you date anyone.
No.
Nobody's making you date anyone. Beyond that, are my friends right? Yes. And it was the repeated use of the word foreigner for me.
Yeah, I wanted specifics because she doesn't mean Canadians here. She's not, I mean, this obviously is like racialized in some way. So like the thing, I think she's like talking around like, oh, it's just like foreign men. But like, I think you should say what you mean.
Yeah.
And then she has the stuff of like, the Americans, I just think it'll be easier to date an American guy. And like, I don't think that, like the whole thing just seems like she's justifying this kind of weird stance. And also, I don't really even believe the like, I just don't want to be set up with foreign men anymore. If you don't want to be set up with men, just tell your friends you don't want to be set up with men anymore.
Exactly.
That would have been like an easy fix for this. But you clearly have like this bizarre hill that you want to die on.
Yeah.
Of like, all men are like this.
I think part of it is framing it as no foreigners rather than who do you want to date? I mean, right. I think probably the vast majority of people do date people who are from similar backgrounds and it's not a thing. They don't go around announcing who they won't date. So I think if you'd said to your friends, like, I would love to date someone who has similar upbringing in the Midwest, someone who loves a casserole, someone who loves certain sports teams, I just feel we would really connect. That would be fine. Nobody would accuse you of being a bigot. You're obsessed with their foreigner status. That's what makes it weird. That's what makes it uncomfortable for everyone. And to go back to something else Michael said, listen to what your friends make fun of you about.
Yeah.
These are your friends. They like you. And your friends who like you and probably don't want to have this conversation are calling you out as a bigot. It's not strangers on the internet. It's not people who hate you. You've got to listen to them and take the feedback. Not about who you want to date. Again, date who you want. I don't want to have that fight. I don't care. But how you talk about it and why.
Yeah. And also, I mean, this is just like a very straightforward act of like prejudice. It's like it's the sort of dictionary definition of like you're prejudging someone on characteristics, like superficial characteristics before you know them as a person.
Right.
And like that's literally what you're doing. And like not just doing it, but like defending it.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think it would be much more legible as an act of bigotry if you weren't using the euphemism foreigner. I think what you're talking about is basically like a specific racial group here. I think that's like pretty obvious, or like that's sort of what I'm reading into it. And like the fact that you're kind of retreating to this euphemism is also kind of indicative that you don't really want to say what you mean. I assume this person's not talking about like, I don't want to date men from Yemen, but people from Oman are totally fine. I don't think that's what she's saying. I think she's talking about like a region of the world, probably.
Definitely.
And so like, if that's what you're really talking about, then like, that's very straightforward.
Right.
I like that you threw in like a straightforward like YTA question where we both were just like, nope. Nice try.
I wanted to give you one where we could just really unload on someone.
Junk.
Yeah. I usually try to find letters for the podcast that have a little more to unpack. Kind of look at both sides. This is pretty clear, but I thought the letter writer probably needed a clear answer here.
I will also say I lived abroad for many years. I lived in Denmark for 6 years and Germany for 7 years. And like when I meet a Danish guy, I kind of have my radar up for certain things. I honestly think that's kind of okay. Like, in my experience, like, I've had, like, bad experiences dating Danish guys for, like, very specific reasons based on their beliefs about, like, racial groups and, like, fat people and stuff. So I try really hard to not, like, prejudge people on that. Like, some Danish people have, like, really bad beliefs. Some Danish people don't have those beliefs. But, like, my antenna are up for those things.
Right.
But I also, it would be really weird if I was just like, I don't date Danish guys because I met some bad Danish guys. I don't know. I mean, it as soon as you get out of the category, like racial categorization, it shows how kind of silly the whole thing is. Absolutely. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, I've had some bad experiences before. I'm going to maybe listen to my feelings on this one a bit more, but not like you're going to delete the category.
Right. And if you're worried about deeply held views about gender roles that you think maybe more common in certain cultures, what you would want to be saying to your friends is, I want to date a man who's a feminist.
Yeah.
Find me a man who's a feminist.
Yeah.
And then they can look for that. And that person could have been born anywhere.
Yeah.
Or even better, find your own people to date. That's what apps are for. You don't need to rely on your friends. And you can kind of find ways to screen people and according to your various biases and kind of keep it to yourself when you're looking through apps. You don't have to broadcast it.
I'm just looking for a guy who opens the blinds every morning and puts them down at night.
Exactly.
I have one criteria.
Without being asked ever.
Yeah.
Those are all the questions we have for this week. It's been fun and hopefully helpful. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Keep up with Michael's writing by subscribing to his Substack newsletter, Confirm My Choices. And you can hear him on If Books Could Kill and Maintenance Phase, wherever you get your podcasts. Do you need help getting along with partners, relatives, coworkers, and people in general? Write to me. Go to slate.com/prudy. That's slate.com/PRUDIE. The Dear Prudence column publishes every Thursday.
And if you'd like to hear your question answered on the podcast, they're looking for letter writers who would be comfortable recording their questions for the show. You can stay anonymous.
Dear Prudence is produced by Sierra Spragley-Ricks with a special thanks to Maura Curry. Editorial help from Paola De Verona. Daisy Rosario is senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of audio. I'm your Dear Prudence, Janae Desmond-Harris. Until next time.